from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. We have a lot to share today. My guest in the second half of the program will be Stephen Ledman. He is one of the most important progressive economists and investigative journalists in the United States. With degrees from Harvard and University of Pennsylvania Wharton School of Business, and a particularly unique humanistic and progressive mindset, he's going to take on a look at the post-convention presidential campaign, our forthcoming electoral dirty game, and the choice between nothing and less than nothing. So that you won't want to miss. I'll be sharing a commentary today on the whole idea that we have to look at how the corporate elite are grabbing enormous amounts of power in every single situation, and I'm going to share something specific about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. We need to become aware of this. We need to get up to speed and understand why this is so bad. I mean, this is 100 times worse than GATT and NAFTA, 100 times worse. If they're able to pass this, and I'll tell you how they're trying to pass it, in secret, with armed guards, and no one's allowed to know what's going on, not even members of Congress, then whose interest is it serving? I'll share the beginning of a conversation on that today. Commentary by Chris Hedges. Growth is the problem. I don't have time for my own personal commentary today. I'll get to that one tomorrow. And also today, the latest on health and healing. Let's begin. First, from yesterday, I want to thank all the people for tuning in. If you weren't able to listen over the telephone, we understand that we had an enormous surge in the last 7 minutes, and as a result, not everyone could listen. They're trying to fix that problem by expanding it. Every week they're expanding it more. We're the number one user of that phone service in the world as of yesterday, and lots of people use it. However, we did post it on the archives. Now, what was really interesting was yesterday's 3 o'clock show. I don't mention that I do a 3 o'clock live radio program every day, Monday to Friday, on our sister station, WPFW, in Washington, D.C., as well as a six-hour program every Wednesday morning on our sister station, KPFK, in Los Angeles, as well as WBI Monday to Friday at noon. Yesterday, I devoted the entire hour to two individuals talking about 9/11. They gave a different perspective than the noon guest. I posted it. Please bear with us. The technical quality of the station, since it's financially challenged and does not have the kind of equipment necessary to do just regular broadcast, you have to kind of listen through the distortions in some of the voice, especially from one guest. But here's who was on. Dr. Robert Bowman. Now, Robert Bowman, you may never have heard of unless you're in the Air Force. He's a retired lieutenant colonel. He flew over 100 combat missions. He was a recipient of the Eisenhower Medal, the George Kennan Peace Prize, the President's Medal of Veterans for Peace, the Society for Military Engineers Gold Medal twice. He's been awarded 6 air medals and dozens of other honors. He also holds a PhD in aeronautics and nuclear engineering from Caltech. He was also on the national security panels, and he's one of the top national security experts in America. He was also the former head of the Stars War Missile Defense Program under Ford and Carter and Reagan. He was one who coined the phrase Star Wars in 1977 in a secret memo. Then he realized that the Star War program was not going to be used as a defensive shield, but rather as an aggressive shield, aggressive tool by the neocons, and that's when he went public on it. He says yesterday that 9/11 was a false flag operation and can be proven such. As a pilot, one of the most skilled pilots in the world, and having met with hundreds of other pilots, all of them agree that it was not an airplane that hit the Pentagon because there was no proof of an airplane. There was no, as he says, where are the bodies? Where are the engines? Where's the tail? Where's anything? Where's the burn marks? Where's the indentation? It didn't happen that way. Then what did happen? And I said, well, if you're telling us that the official report was completely wrong, what is your supposition? And he said, this was a false flag operation, and Dick Cheney headed it. Interesting. And then he went into some detail, so you won't want to miss his discussion. But the discussion that grabbed my attention was from Dr. Timothy Eastman. Now, he is a professor in geophysics from the University of Alaska, but also he is the deputy group manager for the space science support for NASA, Goddard Space Flight Center. He also is the world's leading authority on plasmas, which is a studying of unique matter and charged particles and fields that are pervasive in the universe. He is a signatory of the Scientists for 9/11 Truth, and he is the co-author of peer-reviewed literature, lots of it. And for the first 15 minutes, he said, and you have to kind of be very patient, because you're listening to a renowned scientist and academic who's completely objective and is approaching it with no emotionalism whatsoever. He's simply saying, after reviewing X number of peer-reviewed literature studies on every aspect of the failure of the of how the buildings came down, and then looking at the peer-reviewed literature and studying every single word and every single article of was this possible, then it is absolutely proven that the buildings could not have come down, building the two towers and number 7, the way we were told. It is not possible. It goes against all laws of science and physics. And then he very methodically showed why it wasn't possible. Then he did something remarkable. I said, if we are to assume that your presentation is correct and you're being very methodical in laying out your evidence, then it leaves us with only one conclusion, that members of some group had to have known that there was going to be a terrorist attack and then kept the CIA and the FBI and other national intelligence from knowing about it or stopping it, and then going one step further and creating a false flag by putting detonations, because he explained how every single beam had to have been severed in order for a building to fall at the same pace as if a gravitational fall. If you dropped a bowling ball, this building fell in the same way. And he said it's not possible, because there have been other beams that would have not have been affected lower down that would have blocked and interrupted that free fall, and that didn't happen, which means you had to have perfectly timed detonation to have cut all those beams. And, you know, he said that this could only have happened that way. Also, all the witnesses that they've interviewed that have, including police captains and fire marshals and others who were at ground zero, who said they heard the explosion prior to the plane hitting the building. So in any case, he said, here's how many peer-reviewed literature journals we have on false flag operations done by the United States. And he went through a whole list. So if you have it as a historical fact that we in the United States, certain members of our military and political and corporate establishment have conspired at different times to have created false flag operations in order to subordinate their interest or others' interest, then it means we could have done it again. It's just who would have had the power, who would have been able to have stopped the national security agencies, the CIA and FBI and all other investigative agencies at the highest level from looking at the truth as everyone else saw it, as 2,000 scientists have seen it, and calling it out. Who could have kept the media from questioning it? There's not been a single, listen to this, not a single member of the media have questioned it. Not even the alternative media have questioned it. And if you even dare question it, oh, then you're a kook. No, these people are not kooks. These are extremely qualified people. Listen to that interview. But I'm just telling you in advance, because it's our sister station and they don't have the technical skills, all the broadcasts are a little challenging when they're posted. But at least it's there. You can listen to it. Anyhow, I just wanted to share that with you. Now, when it comes to health and nutrition, and you're eating meat, understand that if you eat pan-fried red meat, men, you're going to increase your risk of prostate cancer substantially. This is from the University of Southern California and the Cancer Prevention Institute of California. Here's what it says. This is published in the peer-reviewed journal Carcinogenesis. Quote, pan-frying red meat may increase men's risk of prostate cancer by up to 40%. Scientists explain that when red meat is cooked at high temperatures, causing cancer, causing chemicals to be formed, it increases the disease risk. They examined 2,000 men involved in the study on prostate cancer. And what they found was, quote, we found that men who ate more than 1.5 servings of pan-fried red meat per week increased their risk of advanced prostate cancer by 30%. And you're talking about hamburgers or any kind of meat, chicken. And a lot of people just, you know, throw oil in a skillet and cook it. Bad idea. If you want to prevent prostate cancer, A, don't eat meat to begin with, and B, don't fry it that way. Good news for mothers who have seen their kids get bladder infections, know how many rounds of antibiotics they have to take. Not any longer. According to the latest study, cranberry juice has such strong antibacterial quality that it can help block repeat urinary tract infections in children. That's the Journal of Urology, the peer-reviewed journal, that published the results, and it was done at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. And they drank cranberry juice each day, and then there was a group that did not drink the cranberry juice, and the group that drank the cranberry juice didn't have the infections. Hence, then it was duplicated at the Boston Children's Hospital. Same results. Quote, pure cranberry juice often doesn't taste so good, but it is very good for them. I would agree with that. And I would even go one step further. Throw some vitamin C in there and Manuka honey. That'll make it sweet, but Manuka honey is also probiotic and is the most powerful healing honey known. That's what you put on scrapes, cuts, burns, wounds, infections. Manuka honey is just terrific. A lot of people are having problems with pain. Understandable. The trouble is, a lot of those people make the mistake of taking non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. Aspirin, ibuprofen. Not good. In fact, each year, a minimum, absolutely minimum, of more than 25,000 Americans die from over-the-counter non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. How many die at home, we don't know because those statistics are not kept. So don't take them, ever. There are a lot of natural pain relievers you can take. Here's the reason why I'm suggesting not to take them. This is from the American Heart Association, published in the peer-reviewed journal Circulation. Here's what it says. Quote, taking painkillers increases death risk, second heart attacks in survivors. Heart attack survivors who take common painkillers after a heart attack have a higher long-term risk of dying or having a second heart attack, according to a new study published in Circulation. The painkillers known as non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs include over-the-counter medicines such as ibuprofen, naproxen, and prescription drugs such as Celebrex, which is used to treat conditions including arthritis. Quote, It is important to get the message out to clinicians taking care of patients with cardiovascular disease that nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories are harmful, even several years after a heart attack, end quote, said Dr. Olson, MD, the study's lead author, and a fellow in cardiology at Copenhagen University in Denmark. So that's one more reason not to take it. And remember, Vioxx was a nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory, and it killed anywhere from 65,000 to 500,000 people. I published an article on the larger number based upon correcting for all over deaths in the United States in that four-year period, and there was almost 500,000 excess deaths, and nothing could attribute that. And so the author of the article that I read, and I looked at his methodology, and it was correct, says that a 500,000 died from Vioxx. Now, keep this in mind. The president of that company got a raise. The value of the stock went up. No one was held accountable, and they didn't have to admit guilt. And the FDA did not demand they withdrew the most dangerous drug ever in history, the worst killing drug in history, off the market. That's how corrupt the system is. By the way, for those of you who have not yet watched Free as a public service to show you how bad our medical industrial complex is and who's responsible, my new documentary, The War on Health, The Tyranny of the FDA, is on my website. You can go to Gary Noll TV and watch it for free, and please share it with other people. It's gone viral. It's all over the world. I'm told that we're up to 15 million hits on that. So it's a lot of people watching it, making it the most watched documentary in history, and it's free. But every single thing in there has been vetted for accuracy. We just really show the FDA for being the criminal organization that it is, and the pharmaceutical company having control over it. So now let's go back over a few of the things. We have nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories, primarily given by rheumatologists, not exclusively. Why? There's so many natural things in the peer-reviewed literature, like the omega-3 fatty acids, that can turn off pain better than the nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories. Cayenne pepper at high heat units can do it. Curcumin can do it. Feverfew can do it. Why use this? Part of the answer is this, only part. I'm coming back from Florida, sitting beside me on a plane is a stranger, and he starts conversation. He says, "I recognize you. I saw you last night on PBS." "Yeah, I was there." He says, "I feel a little embarrassed." I said, "Why is that?" He said, "Well, first, you know, I'm interested in health, but I'm 200 pounds overweight. Secondly, because when you were talking about the pharmaceutical industry, I work for it. And thirdly, I'm the guy that goes in and gives rheumatologists $500 for each patient they get on our drug." I said, isn't that payola? Isn't that illegal? He said, "No, it's not illegal." I said, "But what if a patient doesn't know that the doctor's putting them on your drug because they're making $500? And a rheumatologist could easily, depending upon the clinical setting, could see anywhere from 2 to 20 patients in a day. At the end of a week, that's a lot of money." He's, "I know. It kind of bothers me until I realize I'm not in debt. I have a great lifestyle." I said, "That's very unethical, in my opinion." He said, "Well, you may be right." He said, "But when it comes to paying the bills and having a certain lifestyle, I set the ethics aside. How many others will be able to say the same?" So don't take nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories. Seek out the competent, professional, licensed physician who is holistic and would provide you with the isoflavones, with all the other things that we know will turn off pain naturally. Next up is soy. Now, here's the issue. If you're eating soy, eat the non-genetically engineered soy. But when people say, "Would you whiz, I heard so many bad things about soy," you probably have. But it's not from the scientific literature. To solve the problem, is soy good for us or bad for us? I had one of our scholars and residents, as well as myself, spend almost a year reviewing and reading over 6,000 studies in the peer-reviewed literature. If those studies were paid for by anyone involved in the soy industry, they were excluded. So these were independent study. 98% of the studies were favorable, positive, in everything from preventing breast cancer and preventing heart disease. Now, yes, if you had extreme thyroid imbalance, I wouldn't suggest soy. But soy is a part of an overall healthy diet, especially if it's organic, is healthy. And you have to get beyond these biases that are out there and misinformation over the internet. This is the latest on this. And this is a major study. The title of the study is The Effects of Developmental... that's a different one. This one is from Medical News Today, North Carolina State University in PLOS One, the peer-reviewed journal. It says this: soy diet may lessen anxiety, a BPA on genes. Quote, early life exposure to biphenyl A, that's a bad toxic ingredient in plastics and a lot of other stuff we use, heightens anxiety by altering gene expression in the amygdala, a region of the brain that plays a role in shaping responses to fear and stress. But a diet rich in soy can lessen this effect. These are the findings of a study. And so in this study, it showed that a soy-rich diet was able to impact the body and lessen the impact of the BPA. That's good. And finally, omega-3, those are the good fatty acids, could help improve children's reading skills. This is from Medical News Today. Here's what it says. It says, new research in the United Kingdom suggests that taking a daily supplement of DHA or the omega-3 fatty acids could be a simple and effective way to improve reading and behavior in healthy but underperforming children. Dr. Alex Richardson, Senior Research Fellow, Center for Evidence-Based Intervention at Oxford University, and colleagues published this paper in PLOS One and found that the omega-3s made an enormous difference in this capacity. So if you have a child who's having any learning problems, reading problems, attention problems, see that twice a day they get their DHA. Okay? I'm Gary Noll. That's the latest on health. And just quickly on the environment, we like to go to our environmental segment. This comes from the Common Stream staff. And here's what it says. It says, climate change wreaks havoc on U.S. power plants. Now, I think we have to understand that with the solar storms coming in about 9 months from now or less, and possibly as long as let's say, 12 months, that we don't know how bad they're going to be. But I believe we should plan for them being 15x or worse, and if they're 20x, it's a wipeout. All the power in the Northeast, Midwest, and much of the Southeast will go out. Then you got your big problem, the nuclear energy. I believe that what we have to do now at the grassroots level is we have to inform ourselves. One part of that is an article that Jeremy, one of our staff scholars, and myself wrote that tells you everything that's right up to date on solar storms. It's all based upon NASA scientists and other qualified scientists showing solar storms are coming. We're in the big cycle. It could be bad, and it could be devastatingly bad. But there's no such thing as non-bad when it comes to a cycle, a heavy cycle of solar storms. So our suggestion is simple. How about we start to put as much pressure on the media to cover this, and then they, the major media, can put pressure upon the politicians to say, let's insist that the United States government, as under FEMA, let them do something better than building a million coffins. By the way, I have that up on my website. True story. This isn't one of those hoaxes. A guy in Georgia is driving down the road, and there's this big several hundred acre ranch and out in Macon, Georgia, and he sees all these containers. He doesn't know what they are, and he asks the guy, and the guy owns it, says, well, I get these from FEMA, and these are coffin outside containers, not the coffin itself. And the guy had 500,000 of them on just one place. And evidently, they're all around the country. Why would FEMA be having millions of coffin containers, but they're not coffins? And the guy got in the coffin, the container, and you can see that there's room enough for 10 bodies in there. And what is this? Why would they do this? Just stupid. In any case, why not have FEMA install with the Corps of Engineers backup surge protectors at every one of our nuclear power stations, all 104, plus all of our major grids around the United States. So whatever comes, however bad the solar storm is, we're protected. Just makes sense. In any case, we've been told we don't need to do that. Why? Because power companies don't want to spend their profit on it. And hence, it's no longer an issue. It should be. Time's running out. Here's the latest. The warmest, quote, summer on record in the United States, along with increased demand and diminished water supplies, have put intense and unexpected pressure on the nation's power plants, according to a new report from the Washington Post. Citing climate change and its impact, scientists and experts interviewed by the Washington Post say that the country's energy infrastructure, including large hydroelectric dams and nuclear power plants, are in danger. Designed for a cooler and more predictable climate, but now faced with more frequent extreme weather events, the aging energy system is strained by growing demand and diminished resources. Quote, we're trying to manage a changing climate, its impact on water supplies, and our ability to generate power all at once, end quote, Michael Connor, Commissioner of the Bureau of Reclamation, the Interior Department's Water Management Agency. The nuclear power plants have already felt the strain. Water needs to be cooled. Well, warmer and drier summers mean that there is less water available to cool nuclear and fossil fuel plants. The Millstone nuclear plant in Waterford, Connecticut, had to shut down one of its reactors mid-August because the water it drew from the Long Island Sound was too warm to cool critical equipment outside the core. A twin-unit nuclear power plant in Braidwood, Illinois, needed to get special permission to continue operating this summer because the temperature in its cooling water rose to 102 degrees, 4 degrees above its normal limit. Another Midwestern plant stopped operating temporarily because its water intake pipes ended up on dry ground because of the prolonged drought. Scott Burnell, a spokesman for the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, said the safety of America's nuclear plants, quote, is not in jeopardy. But the sources of water cooling the core are self-contained and might have to shut down in some instances if water is either too warm or unavailable. Well, I would disagree with everything that any of the people at the nuclear power. If you want to see one agency of government that should be completely eliminated, just not just thrown out the door, but kicked out, is everyone ever involved with the nuclear power industry. They can't tell the truth, they're never objective, and they don't allow the real scientist to go in there and to show you the truth that every one of the nuclear power plants, every one of the 104 have been spewing radiation into the environment, causing cancer clusters. They are all old. Some are 50 and 60 years old. They should be decommissioned, and yet there's a lot of money to be made, most of it in subsidies. Oh, did we forget? Socialism for corporate America is not socialism. It's only when you go to help a student by eliminating their debt or lessening their interest rate, that's socialism, and that they're against. But over $1 trillion a year that they see as given to special industries, the military-industrial complex, the banking complex, Wall Street, the energy cartels, the farm cartels, the medical-industrial complex, that's not welfare. Oh, yeah, it is. So at the very least, if you're not going to be hypocritical, take it all away. Take it all away from corporate America and watch about 80% of American corporations go bankrupt where they belong. I'm concerned. We're going to go to our guest in about 5 minutes. It is my belief that how we who are independent of the ideologies and can think for ourselves, we are looking at a world that cannot be sustained. because our entire model is flawed. Virtually all of our current models in every industry are based upon a growth rate of anywhere from 3 to 10% per year. And indeed, China and India and Brazil were briskly keeping those record growths. Now they're all way down. But the United States has looked at everything as if there's an infinite supply of water, oil, land, and there's not. We have overexploited everything. So if we're to survive and have a sustainable quality of life future, we have to start individually pulling back and be responsible. We can no longer say, well, no one else is cutting back, why should I? It all begins with the individual taking responsibility to say, I don't need to eat things that are not healthy. I don't need to buy things I can't use. I don't need to take something and throw it in the environment if I know that it's not going to be biodegraded and be there hence forever. We can do a lot to make ourselves slow down. I believe the future should be a slow economy, decentralized, smaller communities, and sustainable. And a lot of people are of the same mind and are working towards that, and I commend them. The ceaseless expansion of economic exploitation, the engine of global capitalism, has come to an end. The futile and myopic effort to resurrect this expansion, a fallacy embraced by most economists, means that we respond to illusion rather than reality. We invest our efforts into bringing back what is gone forever. This strange twilight moment in which our experts and system managers squander resources in attempting to recreate an expanding economic system that is moribund will inevitably lead to systems collapse. The steady depletion of natural resources, especially fossil fuel, along with the accelerated pace of climate change, will combine with crippling levels of personal and national debt to thrust us into a global depression that will dwarf any in the history of capitalism, and very few of us are prepared. It was Richard Heinberg who said in The End of Growth, Adapting to Our New Economic Reality, our solution is the problem. And that told me when I reached him by phone in California, he said, its name is growth, but growth has become uneconomic. We are worse off because of growth. To achieve growth now means mounting debt, more pollution, an accelerated loss of biodiversity, and continued destabilization of the climate. But we are addicted to growth. If there's no growth, there is insufficient tax revenues and jobs. If there's no growth, existing debt levels become unsustainable. The elites see the current economic crisis as a temporary impediment. They are desperately trying to fix it. But this crisis signals an irreversible change of civilization itself. We cannot prevent it. We can only decide whether we will adapt to it or not. Heinberg, a senior fellow at the Post-Carbon Institute, argues that we cannot grasp the real state of the global economy by the usual metrics: the gross domestic product, unemployment, housing, durable goods, national deficits, personal income, and consumer spending. Although even these measures point to severe and chronic problems. Rather, we have to examine the structural flaws that sit like time bombs embedded within the economic edifice. U.S. household debt enabled the expansion of consumer spending during the boom years. But consumer debt cannot continue to grow as house prices decline to realistic levels. Toxic assets litter the portfolios of the major banks, presaging another global financial meltdown. The Earth's natural resources are being exhausted, and climate change with its extreme weather conditions is beginning to exact a heavy economic toll on countries, including the United States, through the destruction brought about by droughts and floods and wildfires and loss of crop yields. And Heinberg also highlights what he calls the highly dysfunctional U.S. political system, which is paralyzed and hostage to corporate power. Is unable to respond rationally to the crisis or solve, as he says, quote, even the most trivial of problems. The government, he says, at this point exacerbates nearly every crisis the nation faces. Policy decisions do not emerge from deliberations between the public and elected leaders. They arise from unaccountable government agencies and private interest groups. The Republican Party has taken leave of reality. It exists in a hermetically sealed biosphere where climate change is a hoax and economic problems can be solved by cutting spending and taxes. The Democrats, meanwhile, offer no realistic strategy for coping with the economic unraveling or climate change. Well, the collision course is set. It is now only a matter of time and our personal response. It could implode in a few weeks, in a few months, in a few years. But unless radical steps are taken to restructure the economy, it will implode. And when it does, and the financial system will seize up far more dramatically than in 2008, you will go to the bank or the ATM and there will be no money. Food will be scarce and expensive. Unemployment will be rampant. And government services will break down. Living standards will plummet. Austerity programs will become more draconian. Economic inequality will widen to create massive gaps between a tiny oligarchical global elite and the masses. The collapse will also inevitably trigger the kind of instability and unrest, including riots, that we have seen in countries like Greece. The elites, who understand and deeply fear the possibility of an unraveling, have been pillaging state resources to save their corrupt, insolvent banks. Military industrial complex is now militarizing police forces and rewriting legal codes to criminalize any and all dissent. If nations were to be able to respond rationally to the crisis, they could forestall social collapse by reconfiguring their economies away from ceaseless gross and exploitation. It remains possible, at least in the industrialized world, to provide to most citizens the basics: food, water, housing, and medical care and employment, education, and public safety. This, however, as Heinberg points out, would require radical reversal of the structures of power. It would necessitate a massive cancellation of debt, along with the slashing of bloated militaries, heavy regulation and restraining placed on the financial sector, and higher taxes imposed on oligarchical elites and corporations in order to reduce unsustainable levels of inequality. And while this economic reconfiguration would not mitigate the effects of climate change and the depletion of natural resources, it would create the social stability needed to cope with a new post-growth regime. I doubt it will ever happen, though. Heidelberg fears that as deterioration accelerates, there will be a greater resolve on the part of the power elite to cannibalize the resources of society in order to prop up megabanks and military establishments. Survival will be determined by localities. Communities will have to create collectives to grow their own food and provide for their own security and education, financial systems, and economic governance. Efforts that Heinberg suspects will be discouraged and perhaps criminalized by those in authority. This process of decentralization will become the single economic and social trend of the 21st century. It will be, in effect, a repudiation of classic economic models, such as free enterprise versus the planned economy of Keynesian stimulus versus austerity. The reconfiguration will arise not through ideologies, but through the necessity of survival forced on the poor and former members of the working middle class who have joined the poor. This will inevitably create conflicts as decentralization weakens the power of the elites in the corporate state. Joseph Tainter, an archaeologist, in his book, The Collapse of Complex Society, provides a useful blueprint for how such societies unravel. All of history's major 24 civilizations have collapsed. The patterns are strikingly similar. The difference this time around is that we will unravel as a planet. Tainter notes that as societies become more complex, they inevitably invest greater and greater amounts of diminishing resources into expanding systems of complexity. That always proves fatal. The more complex societies are costlier to maintain than simple ones and require higher support levels per capita. The investments required to maintain an overly complex system become too costly, and these investments yield declining returns. The elites, in a desperate effort to maintain their own levels of consumption and preserve the system that empowers them through repression and austerity measures, squeeze the masses harder and harder until the edifice collapses. And this collapse leaves behind decentralized, autonomous pockets of human communities. Is this our fate? The quality of our lives will depend upon the quality of our communities. If communal structures are strong, we'll be able to endure. If they're weak, we will succumb to the bleakness. It's important that these structures be set in place before the onset of the crisis. That is one of the reasons I'm doing what I'm doing now, to try to show what is possible to create smaller, more sustainable communities. Thoughts from Chris Hedges, my guest, in a moment. Please stay with us. We're here to share thoughts on how we can improve the human condition. And that's why we break the program up into different segments. And we're going to go to our guest in just a second. I interviewed him earlier. By the way, I want to thank the people who are sending in some videos that they have taken over the last 30 years of dance parties we've done as a way of celebrating life and health and happiness. And the first one's just up. Oh, I just had a chance to watch him, Mandy. 1984. Oh, that's painful. The style was just, in retrospect, not cool. But what do we know? But we are having a lot of fun, and that's what counts. And I want to thank the people. They're the ones who do the filming and the editing of it. So I was happy because we get to see a lot of you. A lot of you dancing and some interviews at the beginning of one of them. So every week I'm going to put a different one up. And if you have a tape, please send it. Let us post it so people can see all those memories in the past. Send it to Gary Knoll at 2307 Broadway, New York, New York, 10024. For those who are seeking help with lifestyle and behavior modification, if you had some challenging times, I have hired 4 people, each with different skills, and I hired them for different reasons. I needed people who understood human nature, people who were good with human values, who could motivate and inspire. And we have a PhD who does that. We have 2 with masters in clinical nutrition and registered dietitians who help with lifestyle modification and diet. We have people with all backgrounds. Each background is meant to help someone make positive changes in their life. And this way, I can work with just the terminally ill. And if you only knew how many terminally ill are requesting help, you would appreciate why I had to do this. Because I like to help everybody. I don't like to see anybody not be able to get some help. Oh, by the way, one of them speaks Arabic fluently and Spanish. So this way you can all be helped. And it's free. Doesn't cost you a penny. You can call 212-874-4000, 212-874-4000, and that way you'll find someone to help you. Stephen Ledman, nice to have you with us today.
Oh, Gary, it's great to be on with you. You do an absolutely marvelous job.
Thank you. Stephen, I'm going to ask you one larger question and then sit back and listen, as everyone else will, to your answer. For those who watch the deplorable, in my opinion, conventions, and with no energy placed upon those who were dissenting outside, and no energy given to the independent candidates from any of the parties, Gary Johnson, Jill Stein, Rocky Anderson, or those who were supportive of independence, such as Dennis Kucinich, Ralph Nader, and others, and none of the journalists who are progressive allowed to talk, then it just became a corporate love fest. It was like, I was embarrassed when Bill Clinton was talking, because I'm thinking, does he think that we don't remember what he did and who he gave the power, the presidency to? So could you take us now through your observations of the alliance of corporate interest with political interest to create, in effect, a fascism in the United States? This allegiance to corporate Wall Street power, the die-hard supporters of imperial power and the deniers of peace, and the repression of the public versus instruments of the growing police state, and even publications that have done a noble job, and one I commend, like The Nation magazine, especially when they had Alexander Coburn, because I really liked his writing, who are still supporting the president and refuse to see the legitimacy in getting out of their own ideological framework. And yet we see this even on the left, still rooting, oh, well, now if he only has another chance, yet not looking at the reality of what he did when he did have a chance. You know, when you have 1,700 appointments, including Michael Taylor from Monsanto, to run the FDA's food policy, and then he implements programs that will put all organic farmers and small farmers out of business, you can't do that without knowing the likely outcome and consequences, the people that you allow in the door to sit at the table and write the rules. This is not based upon someone having tied someone's hands. This is someone who was completely free to do what they chose to and made wrong choices consistently. Then they go on, and we're supposed to like them, and because we like the way they look and they smile and they shoot basketball or play a saxophone, everything is forgiven. We don't care what else they do as long as we like the mindset. Could you address these concerns I have, please?
Well, Gary, you used the right word. You called it fascism. This really is fascism. I read a book in the 1980s by Bertram Gross during the Reagan era. He called it fascism with a friendly face. You know, Obama's a friendly face. Romney is a little bit more scowly. I'm not privy to who they've selected to be the winner in November. My best guess is Obama will be reelected. Why give up on a good thing? The difference between Obama and Romney is, Romney is very blunt, very brazen. Obama is a consummate con man. After all the harm he's done for nearly 4 years, half the country still supports him. Romney will end up like George Bush, with maybe at best 20% of the country supporting him. Why go with a guy like that, especially coupled with a guy like Ryan, who literally wants to take social America and rip it up into little pieces and scatter it to the wind? But Romney feels the same way, and unfortunately, Obama is doing a good job of it himself. The conventions were an absolute sham. Every single word, I literally, except maybe a Clint Eastwood, every single word by the Pauls was pre-scripted. I mean, PR geniuses crafted every single word, every syllable, every nuance, all the camera shots, the whole thing. It was an absolute sham. The election is an absolute falsified process. There is no legitimacy putting up one party with two wings. It's the money party or the property party, and that's what controls the entire process. They pick the candidates. They decide who'll hold the key posts. They don't give a damn about ordinary people. They only care about their own power, their own wealth, and getting as much of both as possible. That, with the corporatism writ large, if that isn't a good definition of fascism, I don't know what is. And it's delusional for people to think that whether you vote for Obama or whether you vote for Romney, it's going to make a difference one way or another. I wrote an article that said, on issues mattering most, there's not a dime's worth of difference between them. On the most important things that affect everybody's lives who are listening to this program, there isn't even a little wiggle room between both candidates. The only differences are the rhetoric, the nuances, the body language, you know, the tone, the rest of it. But the policy behind the scenes in their secret meetings and secret deals, very much the same. I'll bet Obama and Romney get together and then have a good laugh every now and then, saying, well, you know, whether you get it or I get it, you know, we're both going to do the same thing. Only the American people will be screwed. Indeed, they will. Obama's 4 years, nearly, were worse than Bush's 2 terms. His tenure was worse than Clinton's. Clinton's tenure was worse than Reagan's. Need I go on? It's gotten worse and worse as the presidential administrations have gone on. I simply can't imagine how bad it's going to be in the next 4 years. I don't recognize the America I grew up in, Gary. It simply is not the same place with all the problems, all the warts it had when I was a boy growing up in 1930s, 1940s, 1950s. I was an inner city kid with nothing going for me except wonderful parents. I was able to get into 2 absolutely top schools when it was affordable, and they gave me a grounding, they gave me a future. And I'm writing about the Chicago teacher strike and the issue in the Chicago teacher strike that the corporate media won't even mention. Is public education or privatizing it? Corporatization again, whether it's education, whether it's health care, whether it's anything else. Privatize everything. You know the line. Anything government does, business does better, so let them.
Well, but Steve, that's just a lie. I'd like to, we always spend some time having people in the audience call in on what we call our talkback segment. I'd like for them to hear what you've said and respond to it, and anything I might have said, the commentaries, and respond to them. 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888 is our number. Steve Ledman, who does a program on the Progressive Radio Network every week, one of the most popular ones I might mention, is here, and you can listen to his shows in the archive. And we're just talking about just his view is, now again, it's his view and my view, that it really doesn't matter which of these people get elected. Corporate America is the power behind the scenes, and that's the issue. So we're going to take some calls here in a moment, and as soon as you call in. And in the interim, let's say hello to Lou Ann Panessi. Please hold on, Steve. And by the way, I'm also going to give a number for those of you when we come to the end of our regular broadcast in about 4 minutes. You can continue listening over the telephone, or you can listen over the Internet, either way, and because we go up for another 8 minutes here. And in radio time, that's a lot of time to share a lot of information. So let's see if we have some callers up, and if we do, we'll put them on. And I'm just going to ask Matt, our engineer, to let me know if we have any callers online. And if not, we'll say hello to Luann. Luann, let's start with you, and then when the callers come in, we'll go to them.
Okay, Gary. I wanted to let you know that you've got quite a few listeners who were emailing me about this situation where tens of thousands of dead fish and seagulls washed up on the shores of Lake Erie. This happened a week and a half ago, and people have been emailing me, and they're very, very concerned about this. These dead fish and seagulls are reminiscent of the mass animal deaths that occurred around the world in early 2011. Thousands of dead birds fell from the skies of Arkansas. Hundreds of dead birds were found along a California highway. More were found in Kentucky and Louisiana. While millions of dead fish appeared in Maryland's Chesapeake Bay. Dead birds were also reported in Italy, Sweden, along with massive fish kills in New Zealand and Brazil. So people are asking you, you know, what are your thoughts on this? Is there something that we as the American public can do? Is this also tied to corporate doings? What are your thoughts on it?
I'm aware of the problem. I've been tracking all of this, and we do not have any absolute answers. It could be something that has been sprayed from chemtrails. That is a possibility. It could also be some of the HARP technology that has been used. We are never told when it's used, where it's from. All we do is suddenly we'll see beached whales by the dozens and porpoises by the dozens. Clearly something has adversely affected their navigational system and affected their brain. Nothing in the actual water can be shown. We're not finding parasites, viruses, other predatory fish, infective fish that would have caused this. So that is still open. I do not have an absolute answer, but we are looking at everything. Let's say hello to Ed from Louisiana. Hi, Ed, you're on.
Gary. Hi, Gary. Hi, Steve. Thank you for this great show. Thank you for all you do. You know, what it occurred to me is, as Steve was saying, you know, growing up, I grew up in the 60s and the 70s, and I always had teachers who taught me basic values, do unto others as they would do unto you, and help be a good Samaritan, help the fellow next to you. And it seems like our whole value system has just completely gone to hell. We don't have that anymore. I mean, look at our culture of reality shows. You have a winner, you have a loser. Demonize the loser. Look at our elderly population. We don't respect them anymore. We discard them. I know because I'm a caregiver to my wife who had a stroke 2.5 years ago, and I know the medical system is completely broken, and we just seem to be a culture that's completely lost its entire value system. And I don't speak about everyone, but I speak about a lot of people, most people, the media. And then if you watch the television, which is absolutely completely absurd, you just see a whole consumer box that takes you from one car chase or one bad joke to the next drug commercial for a condition you don't have so that you can buy that drug for the condition you don't have, or a food ad with a completely unhealthy food from a burger. And it's a completely lost
Ed?
Value system that's completely based on money.
You're absolutely right. I'm going to ask Steve Ledman to address that. I'm going to ask the listeners who want to continue in on this conversation to call 832-280-0066. Steve Ledman, would you address Ed from Louisiana's concern?
Well, I absolutely agree, Ed. We certainly are on the same page. And it's, again, this corporatism, uber alles, literally destroying us, whether it's dangerous foods, whether it's dirty air and water, whether it's tainted anything. I mean, it just goes on and on without end. And government and business are in league with each other to cause so much harm, not just to people here in America, but literally across the world. This stuff I write about all the time. I discuss it on my own program, the Progressive Radio News Hour, and I mean, it bothers me so much that too many people in America either don't understand how grievously they're being harmed, or they're indifferent to it, or they're preoccupied with other things in their lives. And I appreciate the fact that people have to earn a living, they have family priorities, but my God, if what's more important than your future, or your kids' futures, or if you're my age, your grandkids' futures, well, they don't have any unless we do something to change things. And I say it all the time in my writing and on here, that people, if anyone expects that change will come from the top down, you're dreaming. It has never happened.
Never.
In human history.
Never.
Never. Never. Okay. Once. The only change that has ever come has come from the bottom up, and it's happened almost miraculously in America when people literally put their bodies on the line and sustained that struggle for years and years.
Steven,
and the impossible was done. Slavery was ended. We got civil rights. We got labor rights. We lost all that, sadly. We've got wage slavery instead of chattel slavery. Civil rights and human rights and labor rights are gone. But it shows what struggles can bring. The only way we're going to change this system that's literally killing us is if people, again, put their bodies on the line for the long haul.
Good. We've got, I just want to take a few more calls. We'll just listen to your comments. Linda from Newark.
Hi there, Gary. Hi there, Steve. I'm glad I was able to get through. I just wanted to comment that thanks to Steve, he pretty much pointed out everything me and my husband have been trying to tell people about how the elections, they're a scam now, all these shows that they put on and people are still falling for it. There was a friend of his that my husband was talking to, and he's like, are you watching the, you know, the Democratic, campaigning that they were doing on TV? And my husband was trying to explain, like, you know, I don't watch those things anymore. Do you understand? And you'd be surprised. Well, I'm sure both of you know it's hard to get through to people once this information, like, Gary, I've been listening to your show for, like, the past 3 years. A lot of this information I try and tell, email a lot of my friends and family, and it still goes on deaf ears. So I just wanted to say, Mr. Steve, I mean, this is great that you pointed out a lot of these things that come with this show that's supposed to be democracy, and people aren't seeing through it. Now, the one question I do have for Steve is that the part where you said that they haven't picked the winner yet. Now, I tried to explain that to people as well, too, and I wanted you to elaborate on the process that they've been scamming us over with,
Linda,
when it comes to the president and the winner.
Linda, unfortunately, if he answered, we wouldn't have a chance for one last question. But what we'll do is this. Steve, would you address how our candidates are selected before they are elected?
Oh, well, the body blocks do the selection.
But not now, but do that on your show, on your next show.
Oh, absolutely, Gary.
All right.
We'll do that.
So, Linda,
we'll do that.
Listen in to Steve Levman's show, and he will answer that, because it's something no one ever asks. How does someone with so little skill, with no background, with never owning a business, with never having employees, how does someone suddenly rise as Clinton did and Clinton and Obama? They rose the same way. Who selected them? How was that done before they were elected? He'll address it. Our final call before we say goodbye today is Bobby from New Jersey. Hi, Bobby. Your turn.
Good afternoon, Jerry. Gary, good afternoon, Steve. My question was basically about the fact that there is no candidate, and you guys touched on it, the fact that these candidates are picked beforehand, the same thing with Hillary, same thing with the other Republican, that was McCain. And so they're picked beforehand. We get the two candidates that we always get. So is there going to be any change? And
no.
Gary, some of your solutions... could you elaborate on that a little bit more before we go on here?
Well, we can't, because we're literally into the next program's time, and I don't want to take that, but I will do this. I will address this in a commentary I'm doing tomorrow, okay? And you can listen to Steve Ledman this Friday, 11 a.m., where he does his program on the Progressive Commentary Show. Thank you all very much. I appreciate your call. Steve, thanks for being on today.
Oh, thank you, Gary. Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. I'm Gary Knoll. And again, for anyone who wants the free help from a lot of different people, each with different backgrounds. Now, none of our medical doctors. One's a PhD with honors, very bright. One's and also speaks Arabic and Spanish. One's nutrition, and others dietetics. They all full spectrum of help, all free. Is a public service, so take advantage. 212-874-4000. Now, stay tuned for Utrecht Lead, one of the most important voices on radio, off radio for 12 years. Now back every day, Monday to Friday, from 1 to 2 following this program. She'll be with you in 60 seconds. You won't want to miss her great insights.